Okay, it's back there somewhere, and you've glanced at it. There's no signal, it says, so that's probably definitely China. Okay, let's leave it, and if it comes on of its own accord, we'll... Okay.
Thank you.
So let's turn it off then, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so China is the best thing that's ever happened to Africa. China has really transformed Africa's possibility of economic, social progress, not political progress. China has really made a huge difference and will, if Africa controls China, continue to make that difference over the next 20 years at least. But it depends. It depends on a number of contingencies. Now, China's interest in Africa is not new. In the 15th century, there were three voyages to Africa. China was very interested in supplying merchandise and symbolic goods to bolster the prestige of the Ming Dynasty. What were the Chinese after? Chinese in those days were after unicorns. No one had ever seen a unicorn. So when China brought back seven giraffes tied to sailing ships of the 15th century, they were obviously unicorns. And the Chinese Ming Dynasty was blessed by the celestial heavens opening up, since the unicorns had been found and Africa had supplied them. Then fast forward really, almost completely, fast forward to the liberation struggle, when China was very supportive of certain aspects of the liberation struggles in Africa, and not so much in South Africa, but elsewhere. And then fast forward a little bit to the 1970s and 80s, when China was beginning to try to help the newly liberated African colonial areas to improve their infrastructure. And China basically was trying to obtain support in the UN through its largesse in Africa. At that point, Taiwan had much more leverage with most of Africa, and gradually countries have shifted away from Taiwan to mainland China, leaving only Swaziland and São Tomé and the Gambia in the camp of Taiwan. And São Tomé is about to switch. Malawi switched a few years ago after Taiwan stopped funding the Malawian government or the Malawian leadership. But nowadays, China is really in the driver's seat all over Africa. And that, as I said, is the best thing that has happened in Africa forever. And it's the African Renaissance, Thabo Mbeki's Renaissance, is almost only possible because of China's support. So what China is doing to strengthen most of Africa, I'll talk about it some length, but it's the symbolism comes in one of the things that Tony Blair said to an investors conference relatively recently. When you go to Western donors, sometimes you get action, but it takes months and years. When you go to China, you've got shovels in the ground within days. And Blair is at least symbolically right. Now, China, I said the other night that the more flip-flops you buy, the better, because that fuels the Chinese industrial might, and the Chinese industrial might then needs petroleum from Africa, gold from Africa, diamonds from Africa, natural gas, coal, uranium, iron ore, platinum, ferrochrome, manganese, nickel, zinc, cadmium, cobalt, coltan, diamonds, tantalum, titanium, timber, and agricultural products. And China has farms in Zimbabwe, has farms in Madagascar, grows produce in those farms and elsewhere in Africa for export home to China. This is a pattern which China has followed, but it is really changing the whole fabric of Africa. There's a symbiotic relationship. Africa obviously has resources which it needs to sell if it's going to prosper. The richest country on earth, potentially, is the Congo. Every mineral you can imagine is there. The Chinese are finally getting things organized in a way, the first time since about 1960, where this produce can actually, the products of the ground, commodities, can find their way out. The Mozambique prosperity, which is about to burst upon us through offshore natural gas and offshore oil, will be partially produced by Chinese companies, also by some British and Italian companies, and there's also an Indian company involved. Mozambique is poised to become extremely rich over the next several decades if all goes well. But China's role is not only buying products, but in buying products from everywhere, Australia, Brazil, and so on, and therefore raising commodity prices. So therefore the African commodities can be sold at higher prices. So China is driving the commodity boom, which fluctuates, but it's still quite high. China's latest GDP per capita forecast was only 7.76 per year in 2014. China needs to grow at about that, preferably at 8%, for Africa to grow at 5%. So the faster we can get China to grow, the better it is for Africa. The better it is for Africa in every dimension. And China, what China is doing is transforming the way in which Africans think about doing business and the way in which they can produce the commodities and manufacture. There would be no exploration of Mozambique, Kenya, Tanzania for petroleum and gas if the Chinese weren't involved and if commodity prices weren't higher. Likewise, fishing off Namibia is partially a product of China wanting fish meal. And the growing of crops in Latin America, and the growing of crops in Africa, is driven by largely export-produced demand in China and the growing domestic consumer demand. China's, after all, over a billion people. And as that billion people has been transformed from 30% to 40% poor, there's millions and millions of people, to 30% to 40% middle class, the demographic dividend has come to China in the way I talked about Tuesday. We hope it will come to Africa. So the consumers, the workers who become consumers, the consumers buy, they ask for more from their governments and from their state-owned corporations. The state-owned corporations go to Africa and purchase and make deals with Africans for the transfer of commodities from Africa to China. Now, China has matched this with, of course, the export of inexpensive consumer goods to Africa. That's not necessarily what African merchants want. They certainly don't want to compete with inexpensive Chinese textiles. But the Suzhou's textile factories are gone largely because of Chinese mainland undercutting, selling inexpensive goods produced with African oil, and the textiles come in. There were, in northern Nigeria, there were 10 or 12 very prosperous textile mills until 5 or 6 years ago, some even owned by moguls from Hong Kong. But textile industry in Nigeria is virtually gone. Chinese textiles are much less expensive. Chinese goods in same quality are much less expensive. So the flip side of, to make a pun, the flip side of Chinese growth in producing from Africa and buying from Africa is China also sells to Africa and undercuts the merchants in almost everywhere in the Africa.
Why not Nigeria compete with China?
Because Chinese textiles are produced much less expensively and the quality is higher.
But why?
That's
no wage rates in Nigeria?
They should be able to compete.
Wage rates in Nigeria?
They should be able to compete, but they don't because they have expensive electricity, reasonably expensive labor because of labor unions and so on, and they also don't have the modern machinery that the Chinese do. That they could get that, presumably, but they can't if they can't sell their fabrics. And this is a fabric industry in Kano, particularly, that's been going for 500 years. Modernized much more recently. The dye works in Kano go back to 1620, 1630. The fabrics, however, were foreign-owned factories which simply can't make it. They don't make the profit that the Chinese either don't need to make or aren't making, or they're simply better at it. Now, the competition, I mentioned the other day that Africans have been selling locally produced chickens in the Lusaka market for decades. They're having a very great difficulty, the local people, selling chickens because the Chinese get to the market earlier and their chickens are less expensive even though they're imported. So the terms of trade are against local producers. Now I want to ask you something. What are the three things that are ubiquitous, available in almost any remote African village?
Coca-Cola
is a very good answer. Second?
Cell phones.
No, not cell phones, but SIM cards.
SIM cards.
And third?
Chicken.
Third is a Chinese trader. They're everywhere, and they're competing. And we've done studies in Lagos of what attitudes towards Chinese traders, and of course, they're naturally hostile. And they don't understand how the Chinese are able to work the African market better than Africans themselves, since they don't speak the local languages, but their prices are right. So they're active. China sells inexpensive consumer goods. It provides very affordable concessionary loans, which are not always paid back. I mean, they don't have to be paid back. So if a country needs a power plant, it'll get a concessionary loan from one of the Chinese state corporations. And that loan might be repaid in oil or gas, or might be never be repaid, because China's less interested in being repaid than it is in gaining influence, and particularly getting what the Chinese call sovereign goods. They want sovereign oil, they want sovereign gas. That is, they want gas and oil that they control, not that they buy on the world market, but that they actually control. So that they want soybeans from Argentina and Brazil and West Africa, which are Chinese soybeans. And they want those in order to feed their pigs. And in order to feed the pigs, et cetera, Africa, Latin America, are very important. Now, China's also demonstrated an enormous willingness to help Africa solve its infrastructural problems. China is building roads like nobody else has ever built in Africa. They may not endure the test of time, but they're building roads. They're building dams. I counted it at one point last year, China is building 77 major dams in Africa. Environmentally insensitive, yes, but they're building the dams that African countries want. The largest dam in the world, bigger even than the Three Gorges Dam in China, is going to be the Grand Renaissance Dam in Ethiopia. Damming the Blue Nile, causing absolute chaos downstream in Egypt. That's ongoing. There may, in a few years, be a war over water between Ethiopia and Egypt, with the Sudan a bystander in that war. That's that Grand Renaissance Dam is critical. Your power in South Africa depends on China building the Grand Inga third stage dam on the Congo River. You get power right now from, not much, but you get some power right now from Inga 1 and Inga 2, but Inga 3 is going to dwarf those, and if the Congo and China can get their acts together, your power shortages will be partially met through the grid, which comes down from Congo to through Kariba, takes Kohora Bahasa Dam in Mozambique and amalgamates it with your thermal and your nuclear power. So the grid is very important. I was flying into Bulawayo about 10 years ago, flying into Harare 10 years ago, the pilot said, "I'm sorry, we have to divert to Bulawayo." And everyone on the plane said, "Why?" He said, "Well, the lights have gone off in Harare Airport." And most people said, "Oh, well, that's politics." And the pilot said, no, over the intercom, "Someone has just stolen an important copper connecting place north of Harare somewhere." So we couldn't land in Harare. So the interconnection, now China is attempting to assist Africa in major, major ways to make the infrastructural improvements that no one has had the money to do until now, and no one has had the willingness or the willpower to do. There's hardly an African country that we can choose that has not benefited so far from Chinese largesse. There's a ring road around Nairobi, a new one, Chinese built. a long coastal road in southern Malawi from Salima south, Chinese built. Quite functional. I was on with you a few years ago. A motorway between Ethiopia and Sudan, a motorway. A reconstructed railway from the Congolese copper belt to the Angolan coast, the Lobito Railway, and which was let go when the Portuguese left Africa. That's now up and running, and the Lobito port southwest of Angola has been completely refurbished by China. How long these things last, I'm not here to tell you, but they're up and running now. There's the refurbished Chinese originally built, now Chinese refurbished railway from Dar es Salaam to Kabwe, where the rail sizes change. That looks good so far. There's a road from Takoradi to Kumasi in Ghana. New upgraded rail links between Lagos and Abadan and Kano. A toll road from Addis Ababa, I'm sorry, our map is gone. A landlocked from Addis Ababa to Djibouti, making Addis Ababa and Ethiopia less landlocked than it has been since the battle with Eritrea. Then the Chinese build fish piers. They build garbage disposal units. They donated a fleet of municipal garbage lories to Uganda. They've got a bulk water supply scheme in Zambia. Football facilities in dozens of African states, stadia in at least 25 African states, football stadia. There are some surplus ones I gather here, but the rest of Africa needs some. They built an airport in Mauritius, and they're expanding airports in other parts of Africa. They've built naturally a military intelligence headquarters in Zimbabwe. That was up and running, and it was built entirely by Chinese labor. Housed near the Kingsmead School, for those of you that know Harare, behind a pink wall near Kingsmead School on wherever that road is in Borodale. They have constructed five or six export processing zones in Ethiopia, Mauritius, Zambia, Kenya, and a few other places. The list of the Chinese built projects are enormous. There isn't even the tiniest country has a Chinese relationship. San Tome and Principe, I mentioned Monday night, with 667 square miles and 600,000 people, has a new Chinese relationship because gas and oil are about to be discovered in the area between San Tome and Nigeria. The oil's there, San Tome simply hasn't had the ability until now to change from its cocoa economy to the new oil economy. The quid pro quo is very simple. China wants what Africa has, and China is prepared to provide the infrastructure that African governments and African leaders want. That's very simple. It's a mercantile relationship. Now, no world power, not even during the colonial era, possessed an appetite for Africa and the gifts of Africa equal to China's today. No colonial power was really. The quid pro quo was very different then. China, and this is very important, China is not a colonizer. China doesn't want to turn the rest of Africa into a Chinese colony. It doesn't want to spread Confucius directly. Sorry?
Why do we know that?
We do, but I'll explain. China is totally disinterested in grabbing territory. What China wants is something very fundamental: oil, gas, copper, cadmium, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, Archbishop Tutu said something which you've all heard in Heathrow Airport 20, 30 years ago. We were together at 6 a.m. He said, the story of Africa was in the beginning, they had the book and we had the land, now we have the book and they have the land. The Chinese don't want the book or the land. They want the produce of the land. And that's what they're getting. China wants influence, but it wants influence so it can get the commodities it wants. And the phrase I used before, sovereign oil, is very important. They don't want to be stuck with buying it on the world market in case someone buys it at a higher price or that it's simply unavailable. They want an assurance that that oil, that iron ore, that cadmium, the iron ore from Liberia, the cadmium from Congo, the ferrochrome from Zimbabwe, platinum from South Africa and Zimbabwe, is going to get out there across the Indian Ocean and make it to the new route into China via Burma, or if necessary, the long sea route through the Malacca Straits. China's building a pipeline from along the Irrawaddy River that ends in Yunnan in China, which is going to take African oil exclusively and get it into Southwest China directly. So China is several steps ahead of any other European or American thoughts on what its future in this century depends upon. Depends on Africa, depends on Australian iron ore, depends on Australian coal and South African coal. It depends on soybeans from Argentina. It depends on those kinds of things now.
The title of the series of lectures is Africa Rising.
Yeah.
And you said the quid pro quo is that the produce from Africa is going to China. The quid pro quo is infrastructure and roads, and roads which may collapse, environmental degradation. That's not a quid pro quo. It's not Africa Rising.
It is from the point of view of the people traveling the new roads. It is from the point of view of African leadership, a discussion which I'll continue tomorrow. It is, with respect, a transformation of Africa in a major way. I'll talk about the downside in a moment. There is a huge downside. But the upside is also enormous, and that's what's happening. Just one example. People in Kisumu, in Western Kenya, are able to get water for the first time because China has supplied the means to get it. The Kenyan government didn't do it until China gave them a loan to do it and brought the engineers in to do it at reduced rates. Because that's what China does. China exports its human resources as well as its physical resources. All these roads are built under Chinese direct supervision, not under African supervision. That's a bad thing, but that's what happens. And the labor, as I indicated earlier, and as I'll talk about again in a moment, is very heavily Chinese, the actual manual labor. And that's one of the huge downsides of what the Chinese are doing. Now, China has no hegemonic design. It doesn't have the kinds of imperial building designs that the colonialists had in the colonial era. Different era, different needs, and so on and so on. This is a UN era. In the old days, it was a European struggle for hegemony in the rest of the world era. Now the Chinese really don't want to stay in Africa. They simply want to make sure they get what Africa can supply. And their views are entirely short-term. Whether that short-term is 10 years or 20 years, they have no interest in developing Africa or in improving things for Africa, but they do have a great desire to be friends with Africa so that they can be favored with contracts and so on. Now, David Livingstone wanted to end the slave trade. He wanted to evangelize. His successors, likewise, wanted to have for the most part, or at least in many parts, altruistic reasons. Not the Chinese. They don't care. They don't want to interfere with Africa for Africans as it is. Now, they also, before going on, I must say that there are how many million Chinese in Africa today? 10 million Chinese in Africa. Already. Now these are Chinese that, as far as we know, are going to stay. There's a new book coming out next month by Howard French, former New York Times correspondent, which features interviews with Chinese in six or seven countries who have come to stay and settle as entrepreneurs in upcountry Mozambique. In Senegal, there's a fishing community in Senegal. There are all kinds of things, and this will continue. So China's not exporting its population, but some Chinese are leaving China for opportunity in Africa, just as previous Northern Hemisphere groups did in Africa. Kimberley was a great magnet for people who had failed in the gold rush in California. I don't know whether these Chinese had failed, but they are leaving the big cities and the rural areas and coming to Africa. And 10 million is not a big number when you think of what China has, but more and more are coming. Now, China is not in direct competition with Europe, with the United States, with Japan, or with Brazil, or even with India. They're not even in competition with strong African nations like South Africa for preeminence in the African continent. They are not interested in gaining recognition of being the big player. They simply want the goods of Africa. They're very, very mercantile and very concentrated in what they intend to do. So the quid pro quo for them is, we will help Africa so long as Africa supplies us. And that's what's been going on. China also wants highly placed persons in African countries who will help China get the resources of Africa. China is very friendly with Eduardo dos Santos, the president of Angola. Very, very cozy with Bashar, with Omar al-Bashir in the Sudan. Very cozy with Mugabe. All the nicest people of Africa are the friends of China. When one says, as I have done to Chinese ambassadors in other countries, and why do you cozy up to Mugabe? He's, after all, a dangerous person, a crook, an exploiter, and so on. They say, it's not up to us. We just deal with the people in charge. We're not interested in politics. We're interested only in getting what we want. So they're very open about that. Now, China also believes, however, in what we can call soft power. Because soft power helps break down the resistance to Chinese getting resources from Africa. soft power in this case is foreign assistance. I mentioned the concessionary loans. I haven't yet mentioned the 27,000 Chinese doctors that are in Africa, some close by in Malawi, who are rivaling the Cuban doctors for an export potential. Africa needs doctors. I given a lecture on the medical problems of Africa. I would have indicated to you that you have about one physician for every 100, or maybe it's 150 South Africans. Malawi has one physician for every 265,000 people. So China's helping fill that void in some of the poorer countries.
Are they practicing Chinese medicine or Western medicine?
Western medicine, as China understands it. Now, the U.S., United States, has embassies in about 35 of sub-Saharan African countries. China has 39 embassies. It has military attachés in 27 countries. It has Confucius Institutes, going back to something we talked about previously, in several key countries like South Africa, Zimbabwe, Kenya, Nigeria. That's mostly to get some cultural exchange. They also supply scholarships to students to study in China. 180,000 scholarships in the last five years. So the student exchange that used to be with Moscow is now with Beijing. But they're much more a small C Catholic than that. In Beijing, a leading television presenter who was with me on a panel at the Harvard Business School was a Zimbabwean who had been a presenter on television in Beijing for a number of years, spoke fluent Mandarin, and was welcomed in China as an export and she produced on television. South Africa produced the one of the leading think tanks on China in Stellenbosch. It's flourishing. They produced that you can learn Mandarin in about 25 countries, funded by China. And they have sent peacekeepers to Darfur, sponsored people-to-people and inter-parliamentary exchanges, and so on. The best bit of soft power that the Chinese have introduced are providing articles for the Nation newspaper in Kenya, and particularly TV spots. So a lot of the news that people are getting in Kenya is Chinese originated, even though people might not know that. So the Chinese have been very clever in that regard. Now trade. If we had the slide that flickered on there, you would have seen that Chinese trade with Africa has gone like this. European and American trade has really been quite steady. China is now doing $200 billion a year with Africa, up from 10 years ago, up from about $10 billion. Most of that is commodity trade. Most of that is minerals, and the price of oil obviously makes a huge difference. And part of it is the cheap consumer imports. Now, look at Zambia. Zambia's GDP, total GDP, is about $16 billion, mostly from copper.
$2 of it.
Dollars, sorry, yes, that's it. Thank you. The other currency. multiplied by 10, yeah. But $2 billion of that $16 billion comes from Chinese investments. So 1/8 of Zambia is Chinese and growing. And the copper industry is very penetrated by China. More than 300 Chinese companies are in Zambia, mining copper, mining coal, looking for other resources, moving into other commodities, some into the service industries. You all know that Chinese merchant banks are in Johannesburg and very active and very successful, working with South African banks, of course. Now, these Chinese companies in Zambia have a very mixed record. The Zambians ordinary Zambians complain, and President Sata ran on an election platform against China, and as soon as he became president after being elected, he sent other people, including Kenneth Callender, to China to apologize and to make up, because China is so important to Zambia. He couldn't continue to be frosty to China. He campaigned against, but once elected, he had to cut deals with China, like Los Santos in Angola, like Jonathan in Nigeria. Going to China has become a ritual. Thabo Mbeki, when he was president, said the Chinese think they can come to Africa and dig up our minerals and sell us junk. That's essentially what Thabo said. He raised an important point. And Jacob Zuma, I have a photograph, but we can't access it on the slides. Jacob Zuma has said very recently in Beijing that the Chinese must learn to be sustainable in Africa. We must help them learn how to develop with Africa. I'm not quite sure what either of those great presidents meant, but certainly China has not been transparent or accountable. It supports military despotisms, Sudan, Guinea, Mali at one point, Burkina Faso, Eritrea, all kinds of places, including Zimbabwe. I have a whole list, which I won't give you, of the places to which Chinese have supplied aircraft, guns, and bullets. China is the biggest exporter of guns and, ammunition and guns to African nations. The Darfur killings of 2003, 2004, 2006 were supplied largely with Chinese ammunition, or done with Chinese ammunition. China supplied jets to Mugabe, jets to the Sudan, fighter aircraft, and is continuing to do this throughout Africa. So the quid pro quo becomes very difficult, because China is complicit in killing Africans as well as building roads for them. It's also, as we said the other day, the biggest Zambian complaint and the biggest justifiable complaint everywhere in Africa is that the Chinese come, but they don't let Africans have jobs. Africa is the least job-rich place in the world per capita, and Africans can't even get unskilled jobs in many Chinese-owned operations, even in mining. This is a scandal, of course, but leaders, so far at least, haven't made it a huge issue, because the leaders become very friendly to China. There are ways of guaranteeing the friendship of leaders. And that's often done. Now,
it sounds like consensual rape.
Sorry?
It sounds like consensual rape.
It might be, but you can decide that. for now, let me finish. Now, China doesn't worry about environmental damage. Your point earlier, very important point. The dams that China is sponsoring and building are happening, in most cases, without World Bank support, because the World Bank has refused to build those dams because of environmental concern. There are three dams in Ethiopia, including the Grand Renaissance Dam, that the Chinese are building. There are dams in the lower Zambezi. There are the dams on the Pungwe River in Mozambique. There's the second stage Kafue Dam, which is almost completed. There are all kinds of dams everywhere that China's building, which the World Bank has refused to touch. So the Chinese have been called in. Now, as defined by NEPAD and the African Union, China also is not interested in the human rights of Africans. They say that's a concern for Africa, but not for China. And what Africa needs to do is to take control of the Chinese tiger, preferably by the tail. But why it hasn't done so, and why it must do so, is different. It hasn't done so because all the Chinese dealings have been one-on-one. They've been bilateral, country to China. China's larger than any African country. The only country that's ever really had the leverage to deal with China is South Africa. And import quotas were arranged with China several years ago. They're still in place. Other countries haven't been able to do that. They're too small. So the answer is for SADC, for the East African Community, for ECOWAS, and all those other strong sub-regional organizations to deal with China multilaterally and impose standards if their leaders were up to it, which could really begin to make the Chinese tiger responsive to African needs. If this has been done in Asia, this has been done in Latin America to some extent, it hasn't been done in Africa, because the rewards to leaders in most countries have been much greater than anything that could come to them through the bargaining I'm talking about. Also, China has done such grand things as build the headquarters of the African Union and to donate it completely to the African Union and to promise maintenance. So everybody is enthralled to China on the one hand, and the quid pro quo for China is you're enthralled to us, make sure we get your minerals and your oil and your gas. Now so far, to go back to what I said at the beginning, China's the best thing that's happened to Africa. But China need not be the best thing for Africa longer term. And the switch is only going to happen when Africans start learning to control what China has to offer. So far, by the way, someone mentioned, there has been some infrastructural failures. There was a hospital in Angola that collapsed. There have been a few stadia that haven't firmed up properly. The road from Lusaka to Kafue, or from Kafue to Chirundu, had to be redone by the Chinese, and so on. But those failures are few. Most of the infrastructure has been sustained. The Chinese are much better than they were 30 or 40 years ago at building. They also, most of the time, purchase local services. So in addition to buying oil and gas and so on, they buy services, they buy cement in Nigeria from the Dangote Cement Company, the largest in Africa. They are actually building other things, but they are not interested in what they need to do, which is to really start investing in African manufacturing controlled by Africans, or in African service industries controlled by Africans. They are, if you like, They're first-class exploiters, but they're doing it for their own purposes. They're very upfront about that. There's nothing hidden about what China is doing, and the quid pro quo, at least at the leadership level, is very clear. Now, another point in this discussion is that very little of what happens at the leadership level trickles down to the people on the ground. Angola is the second largest exporter of oil to the United States, and the second or third largest to China. The revenues are in the billions for a leadership cadre. None of that has filtered down to new schools, new hospitals, and so on. Angola is still pitifully, most of Angola is still pitifully poor. Equatorial Guinea is an island nation, mostly an island nation of 600,000 people. The ruling family has, the Nguema family has run off with all the proceeds from Chinese and American oil returns. Very little has gone down to the lower levels of the people. That's happening in too many places for Africa to rest easily. But again, leadership, and I'll talk about this tomorrow, has not wanted to interfere with the Chinese relationship so far. They haven't wanted to begin to use their leverage, and only Nkama in Botswana, the leader of mainland Africa's longest serving democratic country, and the Mauritius, only those two major countries have managed to explain to China they want this, they want that, and they don't want dealings which will exploit their countries. They've been the outliers. The rest, nearly the rest of all the leaders, even Ellen Johnson Sirleaf in Liberia, have really wanted China for the jobs that China might someday produce, and also for the revenue, in Liberia's case, from the export of rubber and iron ore, which Liberia desperately needs those export revenues and so on. And in the Zambian case, as I mentioned, Sata shifted because he had to keep the export revenues, which were not really available on the world market. China's driving this market. Let me stop there. Time for a few questions. Yeah, yes, ma'am.
As good example of bargaining power being leveraged by Mauritius and the other country. And did that lead to any education or skills development of Africans, or is it still using Chinese labor, Chinese?
Yeah, thank you. That's a very important question, and you remind me of something I forgot to emphasize.
Just repeat the question.
You want to give your question again?
I just said, you mentioned those two countries that did use their bargaining power successfully in their relationship with China, and I wanted to know if that did lead to any good long-term benefits for the country, such as education or long-term skills development.
Yeah, the short answer is no. Africans have not yet demanded the transfer of skills or the transfer of technology. The old nasty colonizers always did transfer skills and technology because they were very few on the ground. The Chinese are prepared to bring any number of Chinese prison laborers and laborers of all kinds to do what they need to do in Africa, and some stay, most go home. The transfer of technology is the biggest crime. The failure to transfer technology has been among China's largest crimes. Yeah.
Has China gone into South America in the same way?
Yes, but they're dealing with more mature economies. They're dealing with agricultural economies like Brazil and Argentina. But in the less well-endowed countries, Paraguay, Bolivia, Ecuador, they're playing a comparably large role as they do in Africa. But they're not after They're not after the Dutch disease riches as they are in Africa. So they're not interested in the oil and gas so much as they are in the agricultural commodities, all of which goes to produce Chinese pork, by the way. Yes? No, no, behind you, sorry.
You opened the discussion by saying that China was the best thing that has happened to Africa. But towards the end of your discussion, you also mentioned a lot of the downside. I don't agree with your opening statement. I think Russia does have an agenda. That agenda is to corner markets, let the rest of the world scramble for what's left. It doesn't come in altruistically and help build roads and so forth, and just so, by the way, we would like some of your raw materials. It signs up, if you can, long-term exclusive agreements, which means that other parts of the world are excluded. But there is, somewhere at the back of all this, a second agenda. Until African countries learn that they should not give away their riches just like that, and of course China gets it because they talk to all the people in top, so they're in their contacts. Until African countries learn that there should be added value to what they export, they will never get from China or get the future that they should be getting.
Well, that's certainly true. Beneficiation hasn't been in the cards, but that's because China wants and drives a tough bargain on buying commodities, and China is the major market for many of these commodities. Europe and the United States and Japan don't need and cannot buy commodities to the extent that China can. They don't need it. Their industries are more mature. China needs, and China's pollution is of course enormous. So there are all kinds of terrible things that result from this, but the statement is still the same, that Africa doesn't have a chance to grow in the next two decades as its population surges without Chinese purchases of commodities. Yes, Dan?
My question is, how would you characterize the difference between the role of China in Africa today and the role that European powers and North America and the Soviet Union played in Africa some decades ago? Aside from the fact that they're much more open about and transparent about, they have no interest in politics.
Well,
they're much more transparent about their exploitation.
Yes, but yes, the 21st century is now. The industrial demands of China are much greater, comparably, than they were in 1920s, 1930s, Europe, the US. Ferrochrome has been needed everywhere, but it's now needed much more intensively in China. China's buying coltan to produce the cones of rockets and cell phones, which then the manufacturers then sells elsewhere forward. China's just a major, major industrial power on a scale that all of Europe wasn't. So that's why I push the fact that China's the last best hope of Africa as the African population explodes. Without China, there'd be no hope of dealing with this population explosion, and none of the population explosion is related to Chinese prosperity or Chinese purchases. In 20 years, 10 years maybe, I might say it differently. Yes, okay, final question. Yes, go ahead.
My understanding is that the Chinese thrust into Africa is more of a regional thrust from various regions of China rather than a nationally coordinated strategy. Is that correct?
No, it's not correct. Everything is coordinated by state central. The state-owned corporations, the nominally private corporations, all march to the Chinese official tune. So parliamentarians are sent out, China. bankers are sent out and allocated places. You can read in my book, those of you who have it, all the tentacles that go back to Beijing. There are regional aspects, but it's not regional. And they haven't allocated Shanghai to Zambia and so on and so on. It's all very centralized, and China, after all, has state-owned corporations that make South African state-owned corporations look like midgets. So they go forward. You want the last question?
Yes. Just a part issue with the top of these stories, Africa Rising. There's so many contingencies, and the negatives you have enunciated them. But one of the contingencies that really worries me is the fact that you said unless an organization like SADC gets it together, and that unless is very big, because SADC can't deal with smaller problems, let alone a mammoth power like China. This is a big contingency.
SADC is an expression of South Africa. If South Africa decides to make SADC into something that it hasn't managed to make over the Zimbabwe problem, it will work.
But
East Africa is much more consensual. And East Africa is moving forward under Paul Kagame's leadership, despite not being the central state there. That area, that East Africa is growing, and they may be able to find a way to deal with China. But as we'll talk about tomorrow, leadership is critical in this realm as in every other realm. I'll see you tomorrow.